Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay from the Straight Wives Talk Show. Here this evening on August 22nd, 2010. I'm really losing time, not gaining it right now. And the Straight Wives Talk Show is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage between straight women to gay men. And each week, my co-hostess Misty Hall and I discuss issues that affect millions of women all over the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. So good evening, world, and good evening, Misty. How are you?
I'm great. How are you today, Bonnie?
Feeling a little stuffed up and catching a head cold, so if I cough or sneeze or something, please forgive me.
Of course.
But we'll get through the night because we have a really interesting night planned with us tonight. We're going to be having one of our favorite guests come on tonight, Wendy, from Texas. And Wendy's the person who does all those wonderful lists for us. And she's expanded her latest list, so we're going to be talking about that a little bit. And if callers would like to call in, we welcome your comments. We want to hear your stories. We'll be happy to give you our input and talk about the issues that are important to you. So please get a pencil and write down our number if you would like to call us live tonight, anytime within the next 90 minutes. The number here is area code 646-716-4893. I'll repeat that one more time. Area code 646-716-4893. And we do welcome your calls. You know, Misty and I feel that when people call in and you talk about your stories, there's always someone who's out there connecting to you. Because even though all of our stories are different, they're all the same, the emotional impact's all the same, and even though circumstances are different a little bit, when you talk and tell your stories, there's always somebody out there saying, that's me, that was my situation. Because we all come from different kinds of marriages. Some marriages were good marriages, some were really bad marriages. Some ex-husbands are good ex-husbands, some are really bad ex-husbands. But all of us still have to deal with many of the same emotions of going through that whole gay husband recovery process of getting past those feelings and learning to trust yourself again, getting through all the betrayal and the emotional impact that just living through this situation has. And I know that as far as I know, Misty, it's really hard for people to connect to this unless they've lived through it. Wouldn't you say so?
Absolutely. Even in Bonnie, you and I, being the professionals that we are in this field, it's even hard for a professional sometimes to connect to the understanding of this. So that's why I feel what you and I offer is very important, not that we're the only ones, but as you know, it's very limited out there to find someone to understand what you're going through and that can say, wow, I really understand that. I experienced that. I think it's very important.
And, you know, I think that we understand, people in the beginning may not always want to hear what we have to say because, as we often mention in our support chat and in my newsletters, that people are looking for some miracle of hope that we can make things better and that we can change their lives with their gay spouses, and we can't. I mean, you know, it is what it is, and we don't have any kind of miracle solutions on how to make this work when it doesn't. We can only give you the support to make the decisions to move on in your life and hopefully to encourage husbands to support, you know, their wives while they're going through this and to try to give understanding on how this happens. But like I say, we're not the miracle workers. We can only, once again, be there to give you the support. So before we move on with our show, there are a few things I want to go through, a few announcements also from both Misty and me. First, I want to remind people about our upcoming Florida Healing Weekend. That's going to be November 6th and 7th in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. And it's really coming along very nicely. We have about 15 women so far who are going to be joining us. And we certainly welcome women from anywhere, not only in this country, but from other countries who are coming as well. That this is a really dynamite weekend, you know, where we really have great workshops and getting to know you and getting to peel down the roots of all of the feelings that we're having and getting rid of a lot of the feelings that we've been suffering with alone. Just meeting people and having that kind of support really means a lot to other women. And I know that whenever I have my get-togethers from wherever they are in Florida, New York, Philadelphia, California, people always feel so much better after meeting other people who, you know, can understand exactly every feeling that they have. So if you're interested in joining us for that Florida trip, please write to me at bonkaye@aol.com, bonkaye@aol.com, and I'll be happy to send you any details. Also, I'm in the process of starting a support group for women who are in Australia. I just sent out the notices, and I'm looking to start that online support chat on September 9th. And that will be in Australia, Melbourne, and Sydney time at 9 p.m. So if you're listening over in Australia and you would like to be part of this group, please write to me at bonkaye@aol, and we'll be very happy to get you set up for that. You know, in Australia is so many thousands of miles away, and yet the emotional impact is no different no matter where you are. And women are really spread out throughout that country, so we want to try to get some support for our, you know, sisters over in Australia. Also, in September, we're going to be dedicating September, a number of our shows and weeks, to the children of gays, gay fathers, you know, children who have gay fathers, and getting a support group online going for them. We're going to be gearing this for adult children in their late teens and early 20s who need support, because there's support out there for us, the wives, and there's certainly a lot of support for the gay husbands when they're in the process of coming out. But there's really very little support for children. So if you have children who might be interested in this, please let me know about that also. And Misty, can you talk a little bit about some of your workshops that are coming up?
Yes, I'd love to. I have a couple things coming up. I have the Saturday seminar coming up, which will be on a very interesting day for many people in our great country. The second Saturday actually falls on September the 11th, and what a day for this country to experience. But anyway, that's the way it fell. In respect to that day, we will have, I will facilitate the journey. The journey will be a Saturday seminar, and basically what it is about is it's just a general journey of getting through this. It's about support. It's about, you know, any of your general questions. It's a good place to start. I like to keep some of these Saturday seminars at what I call introductory level, which I will, you know, address them at any level that needs, but introductory level meaning this is really good for someone, I would say, within the first 2 years. And I don't want to scare people off. Things do improve. Things start to improve immediately. But Bonnie, you and I both know when you have that support, they can improve even greater. And so the first one, September the 11th, will be the journey. That's the title of it. The other thing I'll be offering is I'm doing another workshop. Workshops are generally longer. This will be a four-week workshop. It will be starting at near the end of September, September the 20th, from 8:30 p.m. till 10 p.m., and that's Eastern Standard Time Zone. And basically what that is about, I've got a lot of requests about trying to find out who you are again. You know, who am I after all this tragedy happens? Oftentimes we define ourselves by who we're in relationships with. And when we discover that we're in a relationship with someone we don't even know anymore, it's like being in a relationship with a stranger. And oftentimes we wake up to feeling like we're a stranger inside of our own body because we've defined ourselves by the life we thought we had. So that's going to be a really great one too. And both of these, what I love about doing the workshops and the seminars, if you can dial in on a telephone, you can participate. You will get to meet women from around the world. We have women, this affects women from all over, you know, not just the States, and you get to meet wonderful people, and these women will understand what you've been through. Some of the women that have participated in my workshops and seminars have forged wonderful relationships, and also, conversely to that, you can participate anonymously. You do not have to say who you are, and I know that brings people comfort as well. So the confidentiality is there. They're very low cost for what you get. If you have any questions, you can email me, and it's my name, Misty Lynn Hall, M-I-S-T-I, LynnHall@AOL.com.
And to say that in Yankee talk, that's Misty Lynn Hall, MistyLynnHall@AOL.com. And also, please go view Misty's new, beautiful, comforting website at MistyHall.com. And I think you'll be extremely impressed. And are your workshops up there, Misty?
No, that is something I'm still, we're working on that. I'm learning how to do that. So
that's
by the time the workshop,
right?
Yes, that is a work in progress. I can't talk tonight. Please forgive me. That is a work in progress, and that will be my goal, to have it up before these events take place.
Okay, but you can go to Misty's website anyway, because it's just beautiful to look at when you want to sit and relax. When I want to pretend I'm sitting by the beach, now I don't have to do anything. I can just pull up MistyHall.com, and there I am,
sitting
by the beach and relaxing. So please view her website. I think you'll be really excited when you see it. I just wanted to mention a couple of things. I had some wonderful feedback from our last show from several people, and I have a wonderful friend in California, Steve, who's an ex-husband, who's a gay man, and who's very supportive of the work that we do here, and who believes very strongly in the things we have to say. And Steve really gave me some good insights, so I told him I hope he didn't mind, you know, that I would like to just read a couple of the comments that he sent to us, because we always like to know how gay men think, and hopefully we'll have some more coming on our show, just so that we can have a better understanding, because once again, many times there are things that we just don't understand, no matter how much we try. Not for lack of trying, just, you know, certain things just don't seem to make much sense to us. But I mentioned on the last show that when we were talking about good husbands, and we really focused on that last week, when you have a good marriage with a good guy, you know, not all of these guys are horrible. Some of them are really good husbands. And yet when the marriage is over, it seems like they become strangers, or some, you know, gay alien force comes and zips them away, and we don't even know who they are anymore, because they become totally different people. And Steve wrote back, you know, saying that he thinks that many men turn on their wives and leave their kids behind after coming out, mostly because of what you said, they become a different person. So the former wife, and to a large extent the kids as well, represent their other former person, the horrific mistake they made in their lives, and it's painful for these guys to be reminded of it. They'd like to pretend it didn't happen or that it will go away, but reality is what it is, and they have to deal with it at some time. Fortunately, I think that most gay men learn to accept reality and eventually integrate the former life with the new life. And most gay people are pretty accepting of guys who used to be married, because it's so familiar, and that helps a lot. And he says, I have a number of quotes from famous people I often refer back to now and again, and I love this one from Mark Twain. In 20 years from now, you'll not so much regret the things you did as those you didn't. Very true. And I think this is so because we learn something and gain even from bad choices we make. A gay man marries a woman and 20 years later divorces. In spite of all the pain this causes, kids may have been born of the relationship, and although the marriage was a tragic error, the birth of the kids was certainly not. I cannot imagine any formerly married gay man saying he wishes his kids were never born. So even if the marriage was a mistake, there are always good things to find that came out of it, and that doesn't make the experience seem so bad in retrospect, or at least it takes some of the sting out of it. On the other hand, never having experienced something we could have had leaves us with a sense of loss, a hollowness that is painful. You'll never know what you missed, that sort of thing. It's not having that. It's the not having had that is hard to swallow, so Mark Twain was right. It seems worse to have missed things we could have had than to have suffered from bad choices. Odd, but it seems true. These gay husbands who come out late in life have this profound sense of loss. What would their lives have been like if they had started coming out at 20 instead of 50? We all feel it would have been better and blame the wife for this. Crazy, I know, but that's what's going on. And he also said, you were mentioning gay porn in your last email, and the question of having missed coming out young in life reminds me of an old 80s gay porn film I was looking at recently. The sex aside for a moment, there's a lot of historically interesting footage in many of these films. One called The Boys of San Francisco was filmed in the summer of 1981 and contains footage of San Francisco's 1981 Gay Pride Parade in June of that year. There were all these young gay men in the parade on the streets and probably 20 to 25 years old at the time, and I could really relate to them because I was 23 that year. Sadly, about half the men in the film are now dead. A well-known study in a major journal estimated that 50% of San Francisco's gay male community was HIV by 1984, up from about 2% in 1978. Yet, in spite of that, there's still a nagging sense of wishing I had come out back then. Again, it's regretting the things we didn't do that is painful, and this is at the heart of why gay husbands can seem so cold-hearted when their marriages end. Does this make sense? I don't know. Does it make sense to you, Misty?
You know, like I said, we've talked about this before, my heart truly does go out to the gay men that feel like they have to hide who they are and be married to live a, quote, normal life. And I think the best thing that was said that you just read is the quote by Mark Twain. You know, I think that sums it up better than anything. You know, don't wait till later. It's not the things that, you know, you did do as much as what you didn't do. So, you know, come forth, tell. Find the resources if you are afraid to tell your wife. Find the resources for the help, the support. And it is. You and I have talked about it. Bonnie, it's awful. It's like you. I think you've said on here it's going to be one of the worst days of their lives to come out to their wife.
Right, but I also
support.
Have to think that living day-to-day, a life that's not yours, I mean, I just don't know how people do it because I don't think I could do it. I think it would have to be very debilitating, very depressing, and you probably would act out. And I can understand why, you know, when you finally do come out, you want that to be who you are and you want to be authentic and you want to make up for all those, you know, years that you didn't have. But I still, once again, you know, here's the woman who you married in good faith and who loved you. It wasn't that she did anything wrong. And, you know, trying to understand, but I do think that guys have to understand also that, you know, it's just not about their life. It's about the life that's being now taken away from the women. This was, you know, the only source of security, comfort, and love that they had, and all of a sudden, boom, that's gone. But I think that the more we communicate and the more we try to understand, and that's why, Steve, I really appreciate you sending this in. And we don't have to always agree on everything. It's a matter of understanding why people act the way they act and do what they do. So I think that's always helpful.
Mm-hmm.
I think we have a caller. Let's see if it's Wendy. Hello.
Hello.
Bonnie. Wendy?
Yeah, it's me.
Hi, Wendy. It's Bonnie and Misty.
How are you tonight?
Oh, thank you so much for joining us again.
Oh, you're welcome.
Is it very hot in Texas?
Of course.
Yeah, I don't
know. My poor daughter in Fort Worth has had 20-plus days of 100-degree temperature or above in a row.
Well, she needs to move out of there.
Yeah.
I mean, they shouldn't be even allowed to have that.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
And we're
that should be against the law.
Right. School starts tomorrow, and it's supposed to be 100 here. And I keep thinking about all those poor teachers having to take their kids out to recess in 100-degree temperature tomorrow, being a former teacher myself.
They should call off school until October, I think.
Yeah, but then again, you'd put up with the cold temperatures, so.
Yeah, that's true. We do. And we have plenty of heat here, too.
Yeah,
so,
they panic here. In the winter, if it gets below 40, they can't go outside.
Yes, but there is nothing like the Texas heat to want to kill you because I've been
right.
there in the summer.
Right, and I'm ready for it to be over in about a month. Hopefully in about a month we'll be cooling off.
You'll be
on.
In the 90s.
Yeah.
That'll be great. That's like winter time in Texas practically. Wendy, did you have a chance to hear the letter that Steve had sent in?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did.
Yeah. And I think Steve is a great guy. I mean, you know, he really tries to help and communicate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's someone who truly tries to be a good father, ex-husband. And, you know, he really always says wonderful things about our show and the newsletters.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he does try to explain. But how do you feel on that issue? Do you think that he's articulating that correctly?
Yeah, and I think this kind of ties into what I came across this book that explains some of the development of gay men when they're little and how that just becomes so much a core of their whole being. And I think I truly think that determines what their behaviors are later in life. And I'm reading this book and trying to understand it, but I think, you know, how we sit there and go, why do they do this? Why don't they do this? Why, you know, even Steve was not sure why they do what they do. And I really think it's down in their core, and I'm not making excuses, but I think it's kind of almost a personality, I don't want to say disorder, but the idea that they feel so inadequate from an early age, it just affects everything else they do. And this book talks a lot about how they seek validation because they feel so unloved from a very young age and unacceptable, and how, you know, it's just so sad that their whole life becomes a facade. And anyway, I'm reading more about it and trying to understand.
Can you mention the name of the book for our
listeners? it's called The Velvet Rage. And then the subtitle is Overcoming the Pain of Growing Up Gay in a Straight Man's World. It's written by a man named Alan, A-L-A-N, Downs, Ph.D., and he himself is a gay psychotherapist. And so this story talks about himself as well as all of his clients. So
I was going to say that thanks to your, you know, turning me on to this, I was able to, you know, find a way to reach him, and I did send him a note asking him if he would be a guest on our show.
That would be so great, I think.
And when I was reading about him, he's very big in the world of drug and alcohol recovery.
Oh,
so he may have other insights, you know, certainly, you know, working in that field.
Uh-huh.
And growing up as a gay man. And I think that what you're saying is so true, that, you know, this is one thing that a lot of our women have a hard time understanding, especially when they're going through the pains of divorce and, you know, especially if it's not a good divorce. But sometimes we have to take a step out and try to understand what's making these men tick and why they are like this. And do you think that book explains it?
Yes, I think very well. I mean, it's pretty thorough. I mean, I have to kind of keep rereading everything to really understand it, but I think the points he makes are really valid. In fact, he was married himself for a short time. And, you know, I've got some things highlighted here if you wanted me to. I was thinking maybe you might like me to read some things out of here that kind of caught my eye. One of the things in the beginning talks about how they're growing up, they just feel different, and I can understand how you feel different, and just the essence of all of these experiences was the same. No matter how we expressed it, we needed love, and we feared that there was something about us that made us unlovable. And let me go on a little bit more. How could we love ourselves when everything around us told us that we were unlovable? Instead, we chased the affection, approval, and attention doled out by others. What normally becomes an internal self-sustaining process of self-validation in the healthy young adult remained infantile within us, and we instead became sophisticated in the ways of coercing acceptance from the world around us. So the little boy with the big secret becomes the man who is driven to avoid shame by hiding his dark truths. Famished for authentic validation and without a reliable sense of self-direction, he develops a sophisticated radar for those things and people who will make him feel good about himself. So I think that's how I fell victim to it. But his secret he cannot reveal, not even to himself, for fear that it will consume him completely. Deep inside, far from the light of awareness, the secret lives. Go down beneath the layers of public facade, personal myth, and fantasy. Peel away the well-crafted layers, for only then can you see the secret clearly for what it is, his own self-hatred. And, you know, you had talked earlier about how some of these men go into these rages and just hypersensitive and things like that. And this goes on and on, explains it much more eloquently than I can, but I think that's really true, how it's just that core down there is is driving everything. So,
have you mentioned that, have you gotten to the part in the book, I don't know, you know, this is mentioned yet,
yeah,
about when you're living a lie and how that just becomes kind of inherent in your nature after a while?
Yeah, and it does, it talks about, well, it does talk about the lack of development. You know, we were talking about how they compartmentalize and all that, and how they split off, but also, yeah, it talks about how everything seems hollow after you, because you keep trying to get authentic validation, but nothing, nothing fills that void.
I guess not, because whatever is being validated is a lie. You know,
right.
If you're looking for authentic validation of who you are, and yet you can't tell people who you really are, whatever validation
right.
you're receiving is not authentic, so how could you ever
yeah.
feel really fulfilled?
Right. Now, here's another one. So the avoidance of shame becomes the single most powerful driving force in his life. The consequence of this is that the true self remains undeveloped and hidden deep within. Who he is, what he really likes, his true passion, and more are all colored and buried beneath the facade he has developed to avoid shame. While this helps him to cope with the distress and subsequent avoidance of shame, it is a recipe for trouble in life. At first, the trouble is seemingly minor, but as he grows older, he becomes increasingly aware that he doesn't really know what he wants out of life and what might make him ultimately fulfilled and content. As the years go by, his awareness of this deficit grows, causing various maladies, including deepening depression, conflictual and faltering relationships, substance abuse, and sleepless anxiety. So, anyway, I just...
And you know
really...
what? I think if we weren't married to gay men, we would be so much more sympathetic. I mean, now we can
right.
be... We could be really understanding, but it's
right.
hard to be really sympathetic when you're living this life.
Right, right. And I think that's probably why, you know, I got this book a long time ago, didn't really, it was just too much for me to handle. And now that I'm kind of away from them, it is, I'm able to understand it a little bit better and digest it, I guess you'd say.
Right, and we like to be real clear, we're not looking to make excuses for anyone or for any, you know, bad behavior.
Oh, right, right.
But
right.
we do, it's really important to try to understand at least. I think that so many times part of the confusion is just not understanding.
Right, right.
And once
and
we can understand things, at least
mm-hmm.
we know what we're dealing with.
Right. There's something else, if you don't mind me saying a little bit more here.
No, we would appreciate it. Please do.
The gay man who isn't able to believe in himself, to be satisfied with himself, seeks validation from the world around him, but he finds what validation that he does receive increasingly fails to satisfy. Unable to satisfy his own needs, feelings of rage begin to emerge. His tolerance for invalidation becomes dangerously low, and his hunger for validation is all-consuming. Sometimes even the smallest of perceived slights ignites a flash of red-hot anger within him. And then they go on to give examples of that. The rage he feels is the natural emotional outcome of being placed into an impossible dilemma. Nothing he does solves the enigmatic riddle that plagues him. He is driven by a hunger for validation, yet when he achieves it, the feeling is emptiness. The harder he tries, the less he is satiated. More and better only yields less and worse. Nothing he does seems to really change the forces that pin him to the mat. No amount of struggle, wriggling, even retreat makes a difference. Rage is the experience of intense anger that results from his failing to achieve authentic validation. Like a cornered and terrified animal, he is provoked, snarling and demanding that he be set free from the cage to which he has been leashed. And then it says, of course, his rage only pushes others away. And talks. And then it says, life then becomes an ever-vacillating seesaw between rage and gentility. He reaches out to his world for validation, always sensitive to the slightest invalidation, to which he responds with swift rage. So this explains to me why a lot of the women have these men that fly off the handle, You know, I think
right. Well, they're feeling very frustrated because
yes.
there's some place where they don't belong.
Right.
But I think it's really some good points that, you know, that he's bringing out. And first of all, you know, he's trying to feel validated, so he's trying to live a life that's not authentic to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because validation by society standards, by his family, religion, culture, means doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're doing, quote, the right thing doesn't mean it is the right thing for you as a person.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of women must feel the same sense of frustration and anger. I'm trying to think this one out as I'm talking to you, Wendy.
Yes, yes.
When they're living in a situation that's supposed to be one way and it's not.
Yeah.
You know, they're doing everything to make a marriage work. You know, they're trying their best to be a good wife. They're trying to get validation from their husbands.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say, yes.
Right?
So we have the same problem because we're not being validated either as women.
And then that makes us lose who we are. So here you have two people who are living
yes.
a false life together.
Yes.
You know, the man trying to be somebody he can't be and the
mm-hmm.
woman trying to please him, becoming someone who she doesn't want to be just to
mm-hmm.
try to keep peace in the house or get her husband to love her and validate, you know, her as a wife. So
yeah,
I can see where these two worlds really could come clashing together.
And it just becomes, how I described it, very toxic relationship.
Right,
and
that's why when women tell us that, you know, we have women who come to our support chat, and I'm really very picky on who I tell to come to our support chats because,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's not real supportive for women who are looking to find miracles that we can't offer them.
Exactly.
But, like, when they say that, you know, I'm sitting on the fence or, you know, I'm trying to work this through or I'm trying to learn to accept things better.
Yeah.
And I tell them that there is nothing to accept better. You know, there's nothing that's going to get better.
That's
this
right.
This is not what marriage is supposed to be about.
Yep. And boy, I mean, I don't know who all's listening out there, but to me, that has got to be the first. You've got to have that aha moment. You've got to realize that, as you said, it's a mismarriage. There is no way you can call this a marriage. And
what about these women who just keep saying, but I love him so much, I love him so much, I can't let him go?
Well, my advice would be to really examine that, because I think that becomes kind of a crutch. It's more like, maybe it's not really I love him so much, it's like I just don't really want to deal with what all the changes that are ahead of me, or I don't know if I could handle being on my own, or, you know, I don't know. I think they need to really examine do some soul searching. You know, they might love a lot of things about him, and there are some good qualities about my ex-husband. There's no question about that. But
mm-hmm.
I think if they really, really looked at it carefully and get out of denial.
Right.
I sound like I'm on my high horse, but I've been there. Believe me. I was scared to death
I think that's something that you have to really impress with women,
mm-hmm.
that fear, the fear factor, of course,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, a paralyzing factor in the beginning for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly by reading, you know, your beautiful list that you keep making up and expanding,
mm-hmm.
that it's really easy to see where that comes into play, because fear is a very big factor for this. Wouldn't
mm-hmm.
you say so in the beginning?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I was not real good at dealing with that. I was chicken. I had no experience. The whole thing was just a huge mountain. And you just have to find support that, and also, I mean, I just really believed I was not presenting a good model for my children. It was all kind of walking through the motion, going through the motions, and I just, that nagged at me a lot.
What about women who say, now that you're in a different spot in your life,
yeah,
and you've experienced all this, so
yes.
what is your advice as a woman who's been there,
mm-hmm.
when women say, well, we're staying together because for the sake of the children?
Well, I will say I did do that for a while. I mean, I didn't know. At that point, you know, where my marriage was falling apart, it was well way before I knew really what the problem was. But I understand, and I cannot walk in someone's shoes who has very young children. I do, as I said before, I think it's far better to come from a broken home than be in a broken home.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a lot of creative ways you can figure out to get out of this situation, but I really think that you have got to say to yourself, okay, I've got to get out, now I've got to figure out how I'm going to do this. I mean, I think there's all different scenarios and situations with each family or each marriage, but you've got to have that the light at your end of your tunnel is got to be that, and then you got to figure out how you're going to get to that. Kind of your guiding light is I realize that I deserve better than this. I don't deserve to live with someone who's not being truthful with me. That's not what a marriage is, not being honest with me. You know, maybe before that he thought he was being honest. I mean, I went through all that. Yes, I understand he married me because, you know, he didn't realize. But now, you know, if those signs are there, man, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself. And you owe it to your kids.
You can't keep blinding yourself, right?
Yes. And if it takes therapy to figure that out, which some of that helped me a lot. I was scared to death to do that, too. I was very scared to do that. I just thought the whole world was going to see me walking into a doctor's office that said psychiatrist on it, and, you know, it was going to be in the paper the next day. But I had a bad connotation with that, which I'm now trying desperately to change, that we have such a bad stigma about that. But
I would like to go through, if you don't mind, your list again, because you have expanded a little bit.
Okay.
And,
okay.
You know, this is Wendy's second list.
Version two.
I know. We're going to have a whole book of Wendy's lists. But this book is about this list I really love, because this is called Before I Knew What I Thought Was a Marriage. And this was so powerful to me, because a lot of women who are out there who are on the fence,
mm-hmm.
and who aren't sure if this is what the problem is in their marriage, I think
mm-hmm.
when they hear how you felt, I think they're going mm-hmm. to just connect so much to it. And Wendy has it divided into two columns, him and me. Now, do you happen to have your list handy?
Yes, I do. I have it right here on my computer.
So we can go through all these points
uh-huh.
together.
Yeah.
But first of all, before I knew what I thought was a marriage, so this is what you thought he was thinking.
This is, and I when I say that title, I say it a little differently. I just say,
okay.
Before I knew, and so these things are all before I knew he was gay, and then what I thought was a marriage, and this is how
okay,
we were
so,
together.
So when we're going to start with the him list.
Okay.
So you thought, okay, so under him, you said preferred celibacy.
Yes, absolutely.
He had a work addiction.
Yep.
Long hours.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning away from you.
Yes, and the family.
Manipulative in conversations. What does that mean?
Well, any time that I would try to voice a concern or something that was bugging me, or, you know, usually it was about the fact that he wasn't home, that's most of it, or that, you know, he said he was going to be home for dinner with the kids and I told the kids and now you're not, and those kind of things, he would switch that around, flip that around into making it sound like I was the one griping. Instead of
uh-huh.
taking responsibility for his behavior, he would play games with me and make me feel like I was the bad guy.
Yes, we see that happening a lot.
Yes.
Emotionally unavailable,
mm-hmm.
which is usually very true,
mm-hmm.
that he ignored attempts for understanding, like when you would try to talk to him about it.
Mm-hmm. And he would, and it got to the point where I had to write letters because I couldn't have a conversation without him changing the subject or, you know, arguing, and then I'd lose my train of thought. And, you know, I was so beaten down at that point that I just, he would ignore the letters. So that's why I put that.
Okay. So how about when you said he was defensive about everything?
Yeah, yeah, and that's just his whole nature, and that probably goes from way back. But, you know, I'd say, well, have you seen my keys? No, I haven't touched them. I haven't touched them, you know? And just,
already, like, you're attacking him when you're not even accusing him, right?
Exactly. And that would just be everyday things to, you know, what time you're going to be home. There'd be this big speech about why he, you know, just very defensive about in any kind of conversation about himself. And I think that's very deep-seated into way back when he was younger.
How about the victim mode?
Yeah, always a victim. And he's still that way. Oh, my gosh, he's still that way. Everything is terrible. Poor me, you know. He could be at the top of the heap, the most successful in his field, and there would always be, you know, someone's out to get me. Just almost a paranoia kind of thing.
You know what? I'm thinking, you know, talking when you say victim mode, going back to the book that you were discussing, that maybe because they feel like victims their whole life,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they can't be who they are,
mm-hmm.
that they do feel like they are victims,
mm-hmm.
even when they're not.
Mm-hmm.
Withdrawal from family life.
Yep.
Now, does that include his family also, or just you and the kids?
I should have learned. I mean, I should have paid attention. He was withdrawn from his own parents before I even, you know, before we were together. I could tell. He didn't get to move out of his house until he was a young adult. He had to go live at home through college and everything, and he was just told that's the way it's going to be. And so when he was able to get away from them, move out of town and make a new life for himself, he just never wanted to go back. And I mean, he would drag his feet going to see his family, and he's an only child, but didn't want to stay very long. When we would go stay with them, he was always making excuses to leave the house. But his mother was something.
Right.
Very demanding, so I understood that too. But he learned that behavior, I think, as a child, and then he just continued it here with us. And just when things got stressful, he just took off.
He just retreated.
Retreated, exactly. Perfect, yes.
How about physical presence without emotional presence?
Yeah.
Like he was just there, right?
Right, and the kids picked up on that a lot too, where, you know, they would say things to him, but like I'll never forget when they wanted to show him their schoolwork. You know, the few times he was home when they were awake, you know, be all excited about school things and, oh, well, I'll look at that later, you know, that kind of thing.
Did he participate in their school activities, their school plays?
No, but he would always make sure he showed up for the plays and the programs. But, you know, we always had to go ahead, save him a seat. Then he would just come strolling at the umpteenth last minute. So I'd be stressed out, waiting, turning my head, waiting for him to come.
Mm-hmm.
So he would always try to pretend like he was being the good dad going to these things. But
he did his duty, in other words.
Pardon me?
He did his duty.
Correct.
It wasn't like he really wanted to be there. He did.
Correct.
He felt he had to be there.
Right, to avoid me from nagging him, right.
How about con artist?
Okay. Yeah, just very, very adept at pretending, you know, making things seem different than they really were.
In other words, he was gaslighting you.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Common with many. How about MIA?
Missing in action.
Mm-hmm.
I will honestly say, you know, who knows if this is the truth or not, but I most of his long hours were related to his work addiction and his need for adulation and success and, you know, those kind of things. I really think most of the time he wasn't home was because of that. I mean, I knew where he was. But later on, after he came out to me, or I discovered him, is more like it, then there were more more times where he was missing. He would take 10 hours to come home from his parents, and it was a five-hour trip. Should be a five-hour trip, that kind of
thing. Right. Well, I'm sure he was making little side.
And then I'd call, at 10 o'clock at night, and, you know, oh, well, you know, I'm just, you know, I'm taking my time.
Yes, I'm sure he was.
Yep.
Facade in public, falling apart in private.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and this was more toward the end of our, you know, I could just, as I said before, that bouncing ball that's trying to be held under the water, he really started falling apart. He was having a lot of physical ailments, and just he would get up in the morning and just have these anxiety attacks where he couldn't go to work and, you know, call in sick, and just it got really pretty bad. I started marking it on the calendar. It was so frequent, I didn't quite know what to do. But it got bad because he was supposed to take our son to work. They went to the same high school, and I would have to end up taking him an hour drive to and from before my job because he would, you know, fall apart in the bed that morning. So that became some resentment there.
How about the narcissism?
Yeah, I read a lot about that. That's a personality trait that is just complete obsession with yourself. And
I find that to be very true with many of our husbands.
Mm-hmm.
They are narcissists. I think that most women will know they had
mm-hmm.
to say that they can really connect to something. It's a lot
mm-hmm.
of times the narcissism
mm-hmm.
that they have.
Mm-hmm. And I know you've read some things on those behaviors, and it's just kind of validating for us as women to read about these people that, oh, okay, well, this, you know, this isn't me. This is a personality disorder or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it helped me.
And that
helped
includes
me.
That includes self-centered.
Self-centered,
right?
Yeah.
It's all about them.
Yep.
A master at raining on others' parades and bursting others' bubbles.
Yeah, that's something I recently added. It was just uncanny how he could do that. And that's all tied into the manipulation and the narcissism, and, you know, things would be planned, or, you know, or kids would be excited about something, and they would axe it. And there's just nothing that kills your soul, you know, than that kind of stuff happening over and over and over. And then seeing it happen in your kids, too.
Here's one that I can really relate to. His days were always worse than mine.
Yes.
No matter how bad your day is,
yes.
There's worse, right?
Yes. And I had some bad days. I was a kindergarten teacher, and, you know, I was raising two little kids, and I had some very draining, difficult days. But
they were
nothing
as
bad as his.
Nope. Exactly. No matter how sick you were, he could be sicker.
Yep.
I know that
yep.
story very well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Obsessed with achievement, appearance, and how he was perceived by others.
Yes. Yes, very much so. Had to be on top. Became very arrogant about it, but, you know, on the outside and in front of everybody else. But just had to have the top notch of the top notch, and he would do anything to, I don't want to go into the whole, disclose his whole profession, but he had to be, his group had to be the top of the top of the top, and he would win some great award and be recognized nationally, and then, you know, go right back at it the next year and had to do it again.
In other words, he was an overachiever.
Yes, and, you know, all the colleagues would stand in awe of him because it was pretty unbelievable. But those of us who knew him in the family realized that what at what length he was going to do that achievement, and it, you know, it was just wrong. Other people.
You have something here that I think is really important to hit on, the control of finances.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times these men cannot control anything else, but they really want to control the money.
Mm-hmm. Yes, in fact, I stopped working. I needed to take some time off after I'd done 19 years of teaching, and I was home, and, you know, I said, well, you know, I couldn't help do some of this, take the burden off of you, you know, that kind of thing. And, oh, no, he didn't, because he'd always complained about how much time that took and how, you know, what a burden it was for him to do all that. So I offered to help do some of that, and, boy, I was shut down immediately.
When he had control of finances, did he have control, for instance, of all the credit cards, telephone bills?
Yeah.
Did you have access to that?
I did, and he was very picky about all that. I mean, we had to go every month. We had to go through the Discover bill and make sure there was a matching receipt to every single one of those. And usually I was the one, because he wasn't home, I was the one spending and buying things for the family. So he never complained about that, But every receipt had to match everything on that Discover bill. So I didn't ever see anything suspicious. There was not, at that point, there wasn't.
Right, because I often tell women that controlling finances, you know, if you're not seeing everything, you know, a lot of times it's because they're hiding things on their credit cards or on
their
phone that they don't want you to see.
Right.
So I guess it depends. No. You
so
know.
I did have access to that, but he still wanted, you know, he still wanted to be the one in charge. And frankly, I was ready. You know, there was at least that was one thing I didn't have to do, because I was raising the kids and working and everything else. So, that was my excuse in my naive days of saying, well, he is contributing to the family because he's paying the bills. So.
Exactly.
That was my
denial. This one, I think, ties in with a couple of your others. Always a crisis to whine about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, with mine, I always said, you know, he always has to create chaos when there is none to be created.
Yes, and he's still doing that big time. And
yeah.
But now I can just hang up the phone.
That's true. How
it's
about
very,
the field of
very
rational
freeing.
Life?
I'm telling you, you got to get out. Got to get out.
Skilled at rationalizing behaviors.
Yes. And that a lot of these kind of overlap.
Tense,
you know,
narrow-minded.
Why?
What
you know,
about
why?
Narrow-minded. What was that about?
Yeah.
Was he homophobic?
Not that I really saw. No, no,
okay.
No. Did not see that. But I think that narrow-minded was really more. When I'm thinking about it now, is more. There were a lot of places he didn't want to go. He didn't want to. Anything that would bring him shame or, you know, those kind of things, he just didn't want to talk about it. So maybe that was not really narrow-minded, is that he well, it was narrow-minded, but it was, he didn't want to be open about other things or, you know, me talk about let's go do this or do that or, you know, all these creative things I was trying to do to save my marriage. He was not interested, at all. Now I know why.
Did he make it like he doesn't have a problem with the marriage you do?
Right, yes, yes.
Because a lot of men do that.
Yes.
Here you write, acts of marriage was
fine, nothing wrong.
Wrong,
yes.
However, not ever physically or verbally abusive, as if he did not want to ever be accused of being responsible for the demise of the marriage.
Right. He was almost afraid of me in some ways. It was kind of weird. I don't know. And maybe that was his way of controlling me, making me feel like I was more of a nag than I really was.
Mm-hmm.
As a manipulative technique, you know. The other one, another manipulative thing as I have on there is reliably unreliable. I think that's a manipulative thing, too. You know, say we're going to do something and then last minute pull out. And that was a way of keeping control.
Mm-hmm. That is a very manipulative thing to do. So these were the things that you perceived about him before you knew what the real issues were, correct?
Right, correct.
And then on your end, you have on the me column, this was all on the him column.
Yes.
You start off with, why doesn't he want me? I mean, that must have been something on your mind all the time.
Right. So it's kind of a cause-effect relationship. You know, he was acting this way, which caused me to act this way, and it just kind of unraveled over time. So, yeah, he just was not, and I was not exactly hypersexual at all, but, you know, it was that he just had no interest in me, really, and how he could use me for things.
And, you know, I tell women once you have enough sexual rejection, then after a while you just stop asking.
Yes, absolutely.
Women get tired of being told no, or, you know, making to feel demeaned over the fact that they want to have normal sex, functioning sex in their lives.
Right.
And I always say that's really, you know, has to be a key factor. If you're wondering if your husband's gay, straight men are not going to sit there and sexually reject you.
Yeah, and see, he's the only one he's the one and only. So I don't know what it would be like. I don't know. Don't know what it would be like.
Well, I think you need to find out. It's going to be, like, really different, trust me.
Yeah, it scares me.
Wonderful and beautiful.
It scares me a lot.
Exciting, yeah. It's going to be a thrilling experience
though.
For sure. But then you said low priority.
I was a low priority,
yes. And you were holding it all together.
Yes.
Pretending for the kids.
Yes.
And I think that's a very big factor, too, always having to pretend everything's okay.
Yeah, and I don't know exactly when I came to that realization that that wasn't healthy to do that.
And that comes into your next one of cleaning up the mess of rejection for the kids and making excuses for him.
Yes.
And I think a lot of our women do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'll keep making excuses, oh, your father's tired, your father's busy, your father's working
mm-hmm.
hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when the children complain, you know, about their fathers.
Yeah.
Relentlessly hoping, thinking, willing things to change.
Yes.
That optimism that we all have that something can get better when it's never
uh-huh.
going to get better,
uh-huh.
right?
Yeah, and I mean, even, you know, up until the day I found out, I was still hoping, and... When I got on the bandwagon about workaholism and work addiction, I thought that was going to be, if we could get that under control, then everything was going to be better.
Did he agree with you that he was a workaholic?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And he even agreed to read the book about it. And, you know, I think now, and I thought, well, maybe this is working because he's willing to read it and try to understand it. And now I realize, sure, I was going down a different path, that he was happy for me to go down that path instead
right.
of going down another path.
Really threw you off on that one.
Yeah.
This is really important, too, for women to understand this emotional feeling of searching for ways to fix it.
Yes.
You know, we're always thinking, what can we do to make this better?
Mm-hmm.
And trying a million different things.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing
mm-hmm.
works.
Mm-hmm.
So you always feel there must be something I'm not doing right. Did you
yes.
feel like that?
Yes. And I didn't observe as much as, all the things we've just talked about with him. I saw the pattern starting again once the kids got older. Like, he would treat the kids the same way he was treating me, in ignoring and, you know, putting off and distant and all that. And so when I saw that pattern happening, it just started making me realize that it was him, and it maybe was something that wasn't going to change, you know, that there was something about him that was keeping him from having good relationships. But at the time, I didn't know what it was. But
and you still had no idea that's what it was.
No.
Right?
No, not a clue. I mean, very good at hiding it all, I think.
Well, that, and plus, how old were you when you got married?
27.
And what year was that?
1985, 25 years ago.
Okay, and, you know, I was about your age when I married my gay
uh-huh.
husband.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, maybe it was a couple years before that. But I was still very naive. I mean,
yes. Oh,
what
yes,
would we
here.
Know? I mean, I grew up thinking that a man who's gay wants to be with another man.
Right.
It, it never, nobody said, well, almost all gay men want to be with men, but then there are some gay men who want to marry women. I mean, nobody
right.
told me that part of it.
I never heard of that concept ever.
Yeah, and this is before all these television shows and the internet. I mean, we were really isolated, you know,
yes.
20, 25 years ago. Nobody talked about this, and especially, you know, you're in Texas. Where,
yeah.
You know, you
well,
really didn't talk about
you know,
it.
I was a good girl, and, you know, I just did everything by the book, and...
I mean, had you heard of this even?
No. I'd never heard of it till I found evidence of him on the computer, and then I got on your website, and that's the first I ever heard of it, 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So,
that's even now, and I think Misty will chime in also. Misty, you got married later than that, right?
Yes, I got married in the 90s, and no one gave me the memo that gay men marry straight women either.
That's a good way to put it.
I didn't get that memo.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it was just lack of understanding, lack of knowing, and misinformation.
Mm-hmm.
So going back to your list, depression, walking
yes,
through mud. I mean,
yes.
I know that feeling of feeling like quicksand, that you're,
yes.
that you're paralyzed, and no matter what you're moving, you're not moving
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, I was suicidal, actually. I mean, not over him. I didn't, you know, it was just over the whole circumstance just became so bad that I had to quit work, and I had to get into therapy, into medication and everything, because I was suicidal. I just didn't want to go forward. I didn't know. Everything was just so depressing in my life, that why would I get up and do this every day?
Did you feel that it was your failure?
Yeah. Because he was successful and he was paying the bills, and you know, if I'm the one feeling it, it must be me.
Exactly.
You know?
And I think that women have to realize that if you're feeling like that,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's a normal feeling when you're being rejected on every end.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I just didn't have any hope. I had come to the point where I knew he wasn't going to change. I knew he was never going to understand how I was feeling. I'd tried so many times to explain it, and it just didn't seem to matter to him, or he didn't try to understand. And so I just, my job was overwhelming me, and it just, I didn't think it was good for my kids to see me like this. So I was suicidal. And fortunately, I sent out an email to my family about how I was feeling. They could read between the lines. I never would come out and say it because I was scared. If I did, then they would just descend upon me and make me start doing things that I didn't want to do. So I just kind of pretended like they weren't going to be able to tell. But I went through a couple years of therapy still not knowing what was wrong. But at least it helped me cope with my situation. So I think that was a really, that was a good thing that I had, that I did get that. And I will say learning to recover from that gave me the strength to recover from this.
I think another important emotion you have down here is, what have I done to deserve this?
Yes.
And that when you're in that state of mind, because believe me, I was there.
Yes.
You know, also feeling suicidal, that I just didn't know. You know, I think when you're living it, you just feel so paralyzed that you don't
mm-hmm.
believe you can get out of it.
Exactly.
I mean,
paralyzed,
that's how I felt.
Word.
I felt totally entrapped.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there's no way out. You know, I never
mm-hmm.
knew that you can just pick up your feet and walk out the door and that's the end of it.
Yes, there
because
were no
you
doors.
You really don't believe that.
No, and every door was locked. And I pictured myself at the end of this hallway with these doors that were locked, and there was nowhere to go. So,
and
I had been a good girl, so to speak, my whole life. So I didn't understand what I had done wrong.
Exactly.
Know? And that eats at you, really, really eats at your spirit and at your soul, I think.
And like you say here, you felt like you were existing instead of living.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I was. I was like a robot every day, just going
mm-hmm.
through the motions.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that I was like that, and yet I couldn't change it. in, within
right.
me. I felt beaten down and hopeless.
Yeah, and then right above that where I have existing, I have weary from keeping up appearances. Boy, that was just
and
so
having
true.
To pretend that you're everything is fine, right?
Yes, because I had to make appearances as the wife, this, you know, and show up at things, events, and all this, and you know, everyone would, oh, you're just such an angel, and I would say, or a fool, one of the two, you know.
People ever tell you what a great guy you're married to?
Oh yes.
That must have made you feel even worse.
Huh?
That must have made
you
feel
wonderfully ambitious and. Just look at all the success and just a genius and, you know. Yeah, that was horrible.
How about keeping score but feeling guilty about it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, I just really believed in marriage and you know, the vows and respecting each other and not, you know, not having to keep score, that you're supposed to be devoted to each other so it would come out even. And it wasn't coming out even. I probably made lists back then of all the things that I did, especially on holidays and things like that, where I was just giving and giving and giving. Just take just the Christmas holiday alone. I remember being so resentful and so angry that I was having to do the shopping and coming up with the ideas and the wrapping and the cooking and the, you know, getting the stuff for the kids' teachers and, you know, all that stuff, and he would just kind of show up on Christmas morning.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
And I felt guilty that I, you know, this is a marriage. We should be sharing, you know, I shouldn't be resenting him and all this, but that's all that I felt was resentment, and then I felt guilty about it.
How about feeling isolated from the family and friends and activities?
Yeah. Well, it became embarrassing to, I mean, I would never, of course, I don't live near a lot of my family, but I could never make plans because I knew they would change, he would change them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so it was easier just to say, no, don't count me in on that because I know something will come up and we won't be able to come, you know, things like that.
Wendy, I'm sticking down a couple because there's a really important point coming up that I want you to discuss.
Okay.
That it makes me upset to say it, but a lot of women feel the same thing, that no matter, and, you know, listening to all of this and seeing all the pain that you're going through,
mm-hmm.
that you were angry but still sorry for him.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
No. That's how we all are.
Yeah.
That's the worst part.
Yes.
And no matter how badly we're being treated, we're still feeling sorry for them because they're not happy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is that how you felt?
Well, he's just a very dominating force. But as I learned to unravel and analyze all of his behaviors, I knew that they were coming from that he was a very troubled soul,
mm-hmm.
is what I called it. And I had enough psychology in my background that I knew these behaviors were the result of some very deep negative stuff going on in him. And I, as mad as I would get about the stuff, I knew that a lot of this stuff, he had no clue what he was doing and didn't know how to make peace in his own mind and why he had to be so driven and that kind of stuff. So I did feel sorry for him, and I still feel sorry for him, but I've had to really let go of that. And I keep wanting to tell him to go get help, you know, I just keep wanting to tell him that, but I've had to really break myself of that and realize, you know, that's him, and that's, you know, I can't, it's not my problem anymore. But,
exactly.
And I was in a marriage that I was supposed to be devoted to this person and cherish this person and look at the wedding vows, you know, in sickness and in health. And, you know, I felt like I couldn't abandon him.
I think
that's
how
a female thing,
feel.
Too.
Yes, that's why so many women stick in there for much too long.
Mm-hmm.
Unhappy holidays. That's something
mm-hmm.
I can really relate to
mm-hmm.
also.
Mm-hmm.
It was never a happy holiday.
Oh, the worst was trying to find shopping for the anniversary card. That was the worst.
Something that really sounded sincere, right?
Yeah, and every anniversary card in the Hallmark store, you know how many hundreds there are, and nothing said what I felt. And
that might be a good business for you to go into.
Since
you're such
go.
An eloquent writer, you could write cards for the way people really feel on those days.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Another year I've been stuck with you.
Yes.
Another year, another two.
Yeah.
That would be great. I think that's a great
And his birthday and Valentine's Day. His birthday and Valentine's and our anniversary were all within 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, February was always kind of a
horrible
bad,
month.
Bad month, yeah. Yeah.
I bet your spirit slipping away.
Yeah.
I think that Misty always addresses the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Misty?
Absolutely. I think that's something that is completely stolen by the process, whether it's intentionally stolen or whatever,
mm-hmm.
it goes away, and that's, you
piece.
Have to rebuild. You have to rebuild. And what I tell women, you know, one thing, the beauty of a crisis, if you can even say that, is when you're completely torn down,
mm-hmm.
you're able to rebuild with a lot of possibility and
mm-hmm.
pick and choose what you want from your past. Let and leave behind what you don't want and rebuild.
Wow, that
sounds
great.
Impossible, but it happened. It can happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I agree with you completely on that. Yep. And I think you don't realize it till it's way gone.
You don't.
I think.
Well, I think you definitely do lose yourself because, you know, just like they're trying to live their life, we're trying to be someone who we're not,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
nothing we're doing, you know, is working. So
mm-hmm.
we all of a sudden turn into people who we probably never would have been to start with just to, you know, try to always make things better. And I think you lose yourself and you lose your spirit that way.
Yeah, and you're just your whole, there's just no more joy in your life. There's just, it's, everything's just heavy. And you just tolerate everything. And
you're not smiling, you're not laughing.
No, and you know, the one psychiatrist that I went to when I was in my darkest days when I started, and then she saw me through the whole revelation of finding out about my husband and then moving. And she, you know, by the end of it, over several years, she just was flabbergasted at the personality change in me, because she never knew me except at my very lowest point. And then at the end, when we kind of said goodbye, I probably won't need to see you anymore, she just was dumbfounded that the personality that I was then showing, which I guess I'm showing now, was even in there. She had no idea that person was going to turn into this person. So,
I think that's very important, you know, point to mention also, that, you know, I know for myself, I don't know about you, Misty, but I know I was a very strong woman when I got married.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, exceptionally so. And within mm-hmm. a few years, when I saw, I became what I call a dish rag.
Mm-hmm.
That
yes.
I didn't recognize myself anymore. It wasn't, I mean, not only everybody around me, because then I started isolating myself
mm-hmm.
because I didn't want people to keep mentioning it to me.
Yes.
But, you know, I just didn't even know who I was anymore. And I lost that person who I was before.
Mm-hmm.
I
rebounded quickly once, you know, the marriage was over, because, you know, I didn't stay in it for years and years and years.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have little babies and children, but I felt that I just couldn't do it anymore. It was just wiping me away. I just
mm-hmm.
felt I was no one.
Mm-hmm. I like that dish rag. I think that's just a good analogy there.
And that's what I often say, you know, how I used to feel. And then you said about intense shame that cannot be shared.
Mhm. You just, well, as you know, I had never, I never heard anyone ever talk about the fact that their husbands didn't want them, or that, you know, that you tried and tried, and we just had this picture on the outside of our marriage, and on the inside it was something totally different. But I could never, you just don't talk about that to your family, to anybody. I mean, I just didn't want anybody to know.
I'm just curious, to outside people, like to your friends,
mm-hmm.
people that, you know, did you have a couple friends together?
Yeah, some.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do they feel like you were a happy couple?
Yeah, although, you know, we really, the only time they ever saw us were at these events where I was, had to be the, you know, the doting wife, or, you know, I was just kind of standing on the sidelines. There were people that admired, I think they admired that I put up with him, but because a lot of his coworkers, I think, had a lot of difficulty working with him as well. But no, I think they thought that it was going to be forever. It was a good team and all that kind of stuff. But nobody really knew what it was like at home, you know.
And how about your family? How did they feel about him?
They were not happy with him. They did not. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think at first they were, and they were in awe, you know, of his talent and skills and all that. But they could tell that he was calling the shots, and that I, you know, that I was not. I kind of took on more. I got my self-worth out of his achievements is what happened, and I would float on his coattails about how wasn't this wonderful? He was doing all this, and he's famous in the state, and you know, isn't this great? And I, you know, and they would realize that I was becoming more, you know, just part of
losing
him
your
instead
own
of
identity.
Yeah.
And
yes. Exactly.
His.
Yeah. Yeah. So. And I would start saying things that were frustrating to me. And, you know, as time went on, I could share more and more things. I didn't know really what the cause was of all of it. But yeah, they wanted me to get out long ago, long before I realized I could get out.
Mm-hmm.
So they could tell that I was slipping away.
And how about holding back with kids to make less contrast between their relationship with mom and relationship with dad?
Yeah, that is a very interesting thing that after I wrote that down, I kind of had to go, I guess it was subconscious, but I didn't want to get this real close relationship with the kids and have them always, you know, wanting to, you know, just having an intimate relationship with me, and then have such a contrasting relationship with their dad who really didn't really care that much about what was going on in their lives. First of all, that would make him jealous of me, that I was closer to the kids. I didn't want any of that going on. And then I thought it was kind of hard on the kids to be confused about why does one parent love me more than the other parent. And so I kind of held back because I had always been raised in a marriage that you're supposed to be a united front with your husband. And, you know, you don't let the kids play one parent against the other.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was real big on that. But then there were times when what he would do or say or whatever was very hurtful to the kids. And so then I was in the position where, wait a minute, I can't stand with him on this. I've got to side with the kids. And so I had tried to keep everything smooth, you know, and I don't worry about that.
Do you feel in doing so that you didn't get to be the mother you really wanted to be to them?
Yeah, I think there were some things lacking in it. I did not listen to them as I should have and their feelings when they were younger, and they're you know, they're upset about their dad. I just, you know, kind of shut that down.
Try to smooth it over.
Yeah, and I do have some regrets about that, but I think I'm making up for it a big time now. I am having a great relationship with my kids now. And we can talk about anything, I think. So, you know, live and learn.
How about stay, tolerate, help, stay committed versus leave?
Yeah, that was my, you know, my commitment to my marriage. Do I stay? Do I tolerate this? Do I help him? Do I stay committed? Or do I leave? And
that's something you really struggled with because you took marriage very seriously.
Yes, that was that angst. And then also tied in with that is, you know, is this the for better or worse that I'm supposed to be coping with? Or is this the sickness and in health that I'm supposed to be coping with? I went through this a lot over and over and over in my mind. I really did, because that was very, very serious thing to break up a marriage in my family.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I just, if I'm going to do this, I better have good reason to do it. and there really wasn't anything blatant at the time, before I knew, that would really justify it. I mean, he wasn't fighting with me. He wasn't violent with me. He wasn't, you know, stealing money in other bank accounts. He really hadn't violated any vows that I could tell. Everything was just slipping away, you know. So I didn't feel like...
Let me ask you this question theoretically.
Yeah.
I need to put you on the spot, but I will.
No, it's fine.
You know what the problem was in your marriage, you know, after all of this, you know, when you found out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's say theoretically that this wasn't, you know, homosexuality wasn't the issue.
Okay.
Let's just say this was who he was. Do you think
mm-hmm.
he would have stayed in the marriage?
Probably. I probably would have, which is very sad.
And I can mention that to women because I think they need to hear that also. That, you know, if you're not happy in a marriage and you're going through all these emotional setbacks, you know, I always say that half the people in the world get divorced. It doesn't have anything to do with homosexuality.
Right.
You have to be
Yeah,
happy.
No, it was definitely a toxic marriage. And you know, I was kind of glad, actually, that I found out that, and that just was it. When I found out, it was like almost a good thing in some ways, because that way
it explained everything.
Yes. Now, I can't speak for the women who don't have proof. I don't know. I can't even imagine how hard that would be. but I think it's worth pursuing still to not stay in that. I've been there. I really think you got to get out and find another life. And, I mean, I'm sitting here at 52 and a half years old. I mean, I think of some of these other women that, gosh, they have so much life ahead of them. Don't hang
right.
in
I
that
think
for
that
so
any
long.
Marriage where any marriage, no matter what the circumstances are, where you're living with someone where you're not happy and you've tried everything that you can to make it work,
mm-hmm.
and just nothing's letting it work, that you have
mm-hmm.
to really cut your losses.
Yes.
You have one chance at your lifetime, and you weren't
right.
put on this earth to have to be a suffering servant here.
Right.
You know, this wasn't the purpose or the goal, and that sometimes people present themselves one way, and as time goes on, they change. Now,
right.
when you first met, how was he when you first met him? Was he like...
He was very charming, very much a gentleman. It was
Did
kind
you know
of
him long before you got married?
We only dated about 8 months before we were engaged, but we were older. He was 30. So, you know, in looking back, I might have, there were a few things at that point that weren't wonderful, but I thought, well, you know, that'll change or that'll improve or, you know, and even early in my marriage when things started going south pretty fast, I got books, you know, I was just, you know, this is gotta get better. How
mm-hmm.
could it not, and all that. But I think you're right. Now, I mean, if these women are listening, obviously they have the support of this network.
Mm-hmm.
if I'd had that kind of support, knowing and having other people helping me, you know, get through that, I would have been able to do it maybe. But
well, if women are listening to this show, I mean, even if they don't have all the proof they need or
right.
anything, they have the instinct that something's wrong in their marriage.
Yes.
And I say that, you know, it's hard enough to find out, you know, that it was homosexuality when
mm-hmm.
you had nothing to be suspicious about. But
mm-hmm.
if you are suspicious,
mm-hmm.
you know, that just doesn't come out of nowhere.
Right,
I say,
exactly.
Did you ever suspect your husband was having an affair?
When I was at my lowest, when he absolutely... You know, when I talk about how he didn't want me, okay, well, he's busy. Well, this season is really hard, so now, yeah, I'd wait. Well, then, you know, a holiday would come. Well, you know, maybe he'll be interested when it's not so stressful. Well, then that would go away. You know, that would come and go. And so I came to the point where, no, wait, what was the question you asked me? Say it again. What was the question?
Now I'm distracted about what I... listening to you.
I'm sorry, I lost my train of thought.
Asking, if I may, you were asking, did you ever suspect that he was having
an affair
with a woman?
There, thank you. Thank you, Misty. So I got to the point where, it's not, it doesn't work on the holidays. It doesn't work in the summertime. It doesn't, what is wrong here? And it crossed my mind, affair, but it was like, no way. I mean, there was just, he never showed interest in women.
Mm-hmm.
So, there was just like, no way. And he was pretty, I could account for him, all his whereabouts, pretty much, back
mm-hmm.
then. So, I dismissed that right away. I almost wished it was an affair. I remember going through that, thinking, if it would just be an affair, at least it would explain everything.
Right.
But
wouldn't you say to women that if your husband is not having a physical relationship with you, that has to be a major red big flag?
I would say so. Yes. Yes, it's not you, which I thought it was me.
Right.
But now that I have this infinite wisdom, yes. And so then the next thing after I dismissed the affair in my mind, I did get, what other reason could there be? The only other reason I could think of was that they were gay. And so I remember putting that in a letter to him. You have an affair? Are you gay? What is it? And then, just totally ignored it. And I remember putting it in there going, well, this is dumb, but I'll put it in there because I'm at my wit's end. I don't understand this.
Right.
And, they say when your children are little, then, it's everything's so busy. Well, then my kids weren't little anymore. So it was always, there was always an excuse I would read in magazines and, things like that. I didn't have the support network that we have now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost I became obsessed with trying to figure out why, and then it always came back to must be me. Must be me, because there's nothing else.
Well,
so.
For those women who are listening to Wendy tonight, and Wendy, I can't thank you enough for being our guest, and I hate to keep imposing, but every couple months we really need you to be our guest because your message just keeps coming through so clear to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've been listening tonight and you would like a copy of Wendy's updated list, all you have to do is email me at bondk@aol.com. And also, Wendy's always so generous in offering support, and if you would like to write to her, if you write to me, I'll be happy to forward it to Wendy for you. Wendy's been really wonderful as far as offering support. The most important thing is that if you're feeling these emotions, then, and you have similar emotions, you have to understand that this is the problem.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to look any further. You don't have to wonder, is it you?
Mm-hmm.
It's not you. It's the homosexuality that's in your marriage, even if it's not in front of you, even if you don't find it,
mm-hmm.
even if you haven't discovered it, because these guys are really great at hiding it. And
mm-hmm.
can you mention that book again so that if women want to buy it?
It's called The Velvet Rage. Then there is a subtitle, but I'll just go with The Velvet Rage. And the author is Alan Downs, A-L-A-N, and Downs, D-O-W-N-S. Very, very interesting stuff, I think. Boy, that would be really great if he could be on.
Yes, I'm hoping that he'll respond to me. I just wrote to him yesterday.
Yeah.
Because I would love to have him for a guest on our show to explain things better for us.
Yes.
Again, we're not looking to make excuses. We're just looking for understanding.
Exactly.
So we want to thank you so much, Wendy, for being our wonderful
You're
guest.
You're very welcome.
Time just flies when you're on the
phone,
doesn't it? And we want to wish all of our listeners, a very wonderful week. And we'll be back here again next week with you. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to write to me at bondk@AOL. And, Misty, any final words?
Good night and love to all. And thank you, Wendy, for being on here once again.
Oh, you're welcome. Yep. Stay strong.
You're dynamite, Wendy. Thank you
thank
so
you.
Much.
All right, good night.
Take care. Good night,
bye-bye.
Everybody.
Good night. Bye-bye.
Bye.